Today on Men Calling, questions about prostate cancer, screening, and treatment. It's estimated that 1 in 7 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetime. But even though prostate cancer is common, questions around it are not simple. Medical experts disagree on basic questions like, should most men of a certain age be screened regularly for prostate cancer? If so, what age and what kind of screening is best? If you're diagnosed with prostate cancer, is it better to watch and wait or undergo chemotherapy or surgery as soon as possible? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Men Calling, we will discuss these questions and more. It is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and one thing the experts do agree on is that there needs to be more awareness and more discussion around this common and usually curable form of cancer. Men Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth. From investments to trustee services, more at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer among men in Maine. We'll learn about prostate cancer risk factors, symptoms, and treatment, and address questions about screening for this potentially fatal disease. Joining me, Dr. Gregory Ady, who is a urologist at Four River Urology, Dr. Christian Thomas, oncologist with New England Cancer Specialists, and Lee Goldberg, television anchor, cancer survivor, and the guy who launched Prostate Cancer Maine to raise awareness of this disease. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you talked with your doctor about prostate cancer? Do you have questions about the PSA test or treatment? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us today. I know it is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, but what I'm understanding from doing this research, and I'll start with you, Dr. Ady, is that you really wish there were more awareness all the time, that this is so common and so little understood about prostate cancer.
Absolutely, Jennifer. Thanks so much for having me today and having the whole panel. This is a terrific group of people you put together, and I hope it's a great time for our listeners. The conflict and confusion around PSA screening for men in the United States, you know, dates back over a decade or longer. And in 2012, a group that's termed the United States Preventive Service Task Force downgraded the recommendation for checking PSAs, doing routine screening of American men. And that really kind of hurt the effort to help identify those suffering with prostate cancer in an early fashion. It turns out that 5 years later, they changed that recommendation back in 2017 to a shared decision-making model between physicians and their patient. And that reconversion of that screening recommendation was sort of lost among the general public as well as physicians, because in my world, prostate cancer screening is really important, but I'm a subspecialist, and that's really fine and focused in my world. So it's difficult to, you know, be the primary care doc and put it all together. But currently we have, you know, sort of very clear guidelines about who should be screened and when they should be screened. And I think the why is quite clear.
Okay. Dr. Thomas, why don't you give us a little bit of a primer about prostate cancer? I'm reading 1 in 7 men will be diagnosed in their lifetime. I'm guessing the number's probably higher because there are those who are never diagnosed. What are the basics of what you would like people to understand about prostate cancer?
I mean, I think, first of all, thank you for asking me to be part of the show. I really appreciate it. I think the basics that we need to understand are how to best detect it, and what is the best treatment for if and when cancer has been diagnosed. The detection piece, as Dr. Ady has pointed out, has become a little bit more difficult with the confusing guidelines about who and when screening should happen. And should screening happen with a blood test or with a physical exam when you get a digital exam or both? And also, what is the purpose of screening? Not to belabor the point too much, but when the task force initially said, don't screen or screen only after a longer conversation, the point had been, was there a survival benefit? Are we saving lives by screening? And that's a very, very high bar. What we're noticing now, Dr. Ady and myself, who work in the field, is that patients come later. They do come and they're being diagnosed, but they're very often being diagnosed later when maybe they have a symptom or there is some other test that incidentally found that cancer. The other thing I wanted to just point out, and that's just a general statement, is that prostate cancer is really not just one disease. It's more than one disease. It's many different diseases. It can have a very aggressive course and a very mild course, and it can be very early when there's a tiny amount of cancer in the prostate, or it can be throughout the whole body. Either way, it's very treatable, and especially in the early stages, it's very curable. Cure means it goes away, never comes back. So oftentimes I try to talk to patients when they come and see me about this, sort of like, this is a longer story. We need to really figure out where you fit in into this whole paradigm of early versus later stage and different treatment options. But I think it is important to know that treatment options exist, very powerful treatment options exist at every stage. I'm
All
just going to
right.
leave it at that. See you.
Yeah. Well, Lee, why don't we turn to you? Tell us your story. How did you find out you had prostate cancer?
Well, thank you for having me, Roxy, and I appreciate the doctors being here. Honestly, I didn't even know what PSA was, didn't know what a PSA test was. I pretty much sure at some point I knew I had a prostate, but I didn't really do a lot of research on that either. I happened to go for my regular physical. I had turned 50, and my labs came back like they test for cholesterol and everything else. The same vial of blood. My doctor, without even asking me, had put a PSA test on there for me. And I said, "Hey, what's that yellow thing?" And he's like, "Oh, that's PSA." I said, "Okay, what's that?" So my PCP happened to do it, Dr. Timothy Baum, who is my hero. And he's retiring, but that's okay. We're going to talk about that. He just did it. And then we had a conversation, and I understood more about what PSA was. And then I was like, okay. And so I really honestly got lucky. He put it in the test for me without even telling me. They had already taken the vial of blood anyway. So it was just one more test on the vial that I had. And that instance has driven everything that I'll say from here on forward. If this was a 2-hour show or 8-hour show, I could talk for all of it because I have so much passion about this topic, about the testing process, about the parameters to get tested, about why a lot, not every PCP will do testing. I was a 52-year-old man at the time, no symptoms, no family history, 100% healthy, and not a single blood test that raised any alarms about anything. There's no air quote reason I should have gotten prostate cancer. But I did. And so this has become my mission to spread the word specifically about testing and what it actually means so people don't get scared to have a test. And when I say people, I'm talking about doctors. Don't be scared to let your patients get tested. It's just a piece to a big puzzle, and it's worth getting the information.
So, Lee, when you got that positive test, then what? What happened next, and what did they find?
I was referred to a urologist, in the interest of full disclosure, I've become so much more, Rooksy, in charge of my own medical care and my own decision making than I ever was before. I was raised, doctor says it, you do it, and that's great. Doctors are brilliant, and we need them. I also now strongly believe in you having a say as well. So the first doctor I got referred to, we didn't hit it off. I had a certain set of ideas of how I wanted to approach this. I was obviously very scared. The doctor had different ideas. I asked to get referred to someone else. And then I got referred to someone else, and that person I got along a little bit better, a lot better, and had conversations, and we had a plan. I mean, he let me have a say in what it was going to look like. Prostate cancer is a slow-growing cancer. I was inherently afraid of any of the testing that was going to happen. I was afraid that I might find out I actually did have it. So ultimately, I did. I kept an eye on my PSA, got tested a little bit more regularly as it started to climb up, and four is the number you're supposed to stay under. So as soon as I got over it, I agreed to finally have a biopsy, and that's when they discovered the cancer. So, but I it, that was about a year after my original PSA test that showed that it was trending in the wrong direction. And I that was on my end. I delayed a year, but keeping an eye on it where I was getting tested every 3 months to make sure it didn't grow too fast.
So you were doing what they sometimes recommend, the watchful waiting. You didn't decide right away to have some sort of chemotherapy or surgery. You did the watchful waiting, and then your numbers grew.
Well, right. So, and I don't want to go too deep in the weeds. I know the doctors will have something to say here, but there's the common belief as to why they are in some cases reluctant to test for PSA is they don't want to overdiagnose prostate cancer. You don't want the treatment to be worse than the actual disease. So I understand that, but it has been accepted widely recently within the past couple of years that watch and wait active surveillance is an acceptable form of treatment, which now takes out of the equation why you wouldn't test everybody with a PSA test. If they're going to the doctor and they're getting a physical and you're already taking a vial of their blood, there's no reason to not run one more test on the same vial of blood you already have. It's not the answer. It doesn't tell you everything. People can have elevated PSAs and not have prostate cancer. Sometimes it happens. It's okay. It's just an important piece to the puzzle that any patient should have the right to get. And I've said this before on TV, and I'll say it until can't talk anymore. If your doctor will not listen to you and do the things that you want, get a new doctor. They work for you. You have a right to ask for somebody else. You don't have to do whatever they say. You certainly should be guided by them. They're far smarter than we are. But if you're not 100% committed to what they're telling you, ask for someone else. It's too important to not stand up for yourself.
Dr. Adie, isn't it true that even if you have the elevated PSA, there's still a lot of decisions to be made because, for example, surgery can have some side effects that are really quite negative?
I think you're exactly right, Jennifer, and I just want to thank Lee for being here and all he's done to share his story and to be so public about it is really powerful, especially with the position that you hold in our community. So, and I think the story that Lee tells is really powerful in what you're asking too, Jennifer, in that my big complaint about PSA is we don't need rationing of the PSA at wherever you're being screened. We need rational approach to the PSA. Such that exactly what Lee described, he was referred, he had a rational discussion, he engaged in shared decision making. The decision was to check it at frequent intervals. And all of that developed before it sounds like you had your biopsy done and the cancer was diagnosed. So, different than actually the term of watchful waiting, this was just really closer screening to see if Lee was appropriate to have a biopsy, as opposed to in many years ago. One elevated value was considered worrisome, and men were taken directly to biopsy. And now we have many other features that are inserted into the screening paradigm, such as a special type of MRI for the prostate, which happens prior to biopsies now. So every effort is being made to make sure we are biopsying the correct group of men. And then beyond that, we have, because of the complications, potential complications, and side effects you were mentioning, Jennifer, that are associated with treatment, we want to make sure of those men diagnosed with prostate cancer that they are being treated appropriately if necessary, because approximately 35% of men diagnosed with prostate cancer are actually in a low volume early stage where they can be most likely successfully followed with surveillance and don't need to actually pursue radiation therapy or surgical prostatectomy. So it's really you want to make sure that I think the best part that Lee hit on was you want to make sure that you have a relationship with that physician that's providing that care, because without an advocate in medicine, things can go off the rails, whether that's intentionally or unintentionally. And I think it's unintentionally most of the time because of lots of reasons we could discuss, but you really need to be your own advocate or have others help you with that advocacy, I think.
Dr. Thomas, how curable is prostate cancer?
Well, it depends on the type of prostate cancer you're dealing with, obviously. So there are different types of degree of how aggressive the cancer can be. We just heard that for some, maybe a third of the cases, watchful waiting would be, or active surveillance is the technical term, would be appropriate. Those are very, very low grade prostate cancers that don't move very fast. And especially when you have a patient that's coming to the office that might be a bit older, maybe. In a situation like that, avoiding radiation therapy, surgery is very appropriate. And we have actually very good data for that now. I think that prostate cancer is basically always treatable. And treatment means we're doing something to make the cancer better. A lot of the time, prostate cancer is curable. Dr. Ady can take out the prostate, a radiation oncologist. We don't have one on the call right now, but they can also treat earlier stage disease with a big machine that focuses a radiation beam to the prostate and destroys the cancer that way. That's another option. And we have options in the medical oncology world, be that a pill or an injection, hormone therapy usually, or chemotherapy, even in more advanced cases. So I think, you know, there is no one answer to your question how curable it is, but typically, especially if found early, it's highly curable. And if it's found at a later stage where maybe the cancer cells have moved outside the prostate, it's at least highly treatable so that patients typically can live with a cancer for a very long time.
It strikes me as sort of, I don't know if the word is ironic, that often the screenings are recommended for older men, but that, and Dr. Thomas, you're nodding, but that older men are those for whom treatment is not likely to be recommended, and it's younger men like Lee who would most benefit from the screening.
I think you picked up on a really, really important point. And one of the disadvantages of screening is that we sometimes find cancers we don't want to treat, and that we sometimes find cancer, especially in younger men, who should have been screened earlier. And I'm sure that Dr. Ady is dealing with this quite a bit.
Dr. Ady, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great segue to just hit on what are the guidelines for PSA screening. And so I think if you're an American man out there without Black ancestry or without, you know, significant family history of cancers, you should really be getting your first PSA between ages 45 and 50. And we have a challenge in this state and this country of having enough primary care physicians. So I'm sad to hear Dr. Baum is retiring because he's a rock star. And we need more help at the primary care level so that patients can have regular primary care between the ages of 45 and 50, because most people don't really think of that in their 40s in our country. So that's when they should have their first one. And if you do have Black ancestry, or you have a history of germline mutations and a significant family history of cancer, you should have your first PSA between age 40 and 45. You know, we're seeing these, you know, recommended testing intervals, like in the colorectal cancer screening. We're seeing everything move sooner because we really need to think about healthcare at a time when we're not sick, and that's the important part of it. And the guideline around screening has softened in terms of, it used to be a hard and fast, every single year you should have your PSA. And in many cases, we tend to think that way. But with a normal PSA and a normal examination, it could go to an every 2 or 3 year testing interval, screening interval. It does, you know, in many cases, patients have it drawn as part of their annual physical exam labs, but many 40 or 45 year old men are not necessarily having an annual physical at that point, like they might be at the recommended age of 50. But suffice it to say, we're not starting the screening soon enough in most men. And I think that there may be some other societal reasons for that.
Well, Dr. Ady, I love that you said that. And if I can jump in, Jenna, so sorry. I feel like prostate cancer gets for no back lack of a better term, a bad rap, because it's a slow growing cancer. And that famous statement that drives me nuts, that more people will die with prostate cancer than of it. I don't think it's taken seriously enough. And so if you put it off and you put it off and you put it off, and also being said, most men generally will not go to a doctor until they feel that there's something wrong. And at that point, it's going to be too late. So if the testing was done early enough and it was caught early enough, then so many people, I can't tell you the hundreds of messages that I've gotten since I first, and my wife and I and family decided to go public with our story years ago now, of people who've gone to the doctor. They've said, no, you don't need a PSA test. You're only 53. You don't have any symptoms. Just like me, I was 52, no symptoms, no family history. And then 2 years would go by, or 3 years would go by. Then all of a sudden they had a pain in their side and their PSA is 105, you know, and it's just like, we could have got this. Or people who lost family members. If it was an invasive test to get a PSA, I'd be like, no, I understand why you don't want to do that, but it's not, it's a blood test. Like it's never been explained to me yet why something so simple to at least point you in a direction is not just widely done more regularly. It should be mandatory, like they test for everything else. Why wouldn't you also just throw that in there? It's no more work for anybody.
We do have to take a quick break. We are talking about prostate cancer on Maine Calling. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post a comment on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, prostate cancer. We're going to talk about, or we have been talking about, screening and treatments. With me, Dr. Christian Thomas, an oncologist with New England Cancer Specialists, Lee Goldberg, a television anchor and prostate cancer survivor who helped start an organization called Prostate Cancer Maine, and Dr. Greg Ady. Dr. Ady is with He's a urologist at Four River Urology. Please send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Christopher, who's calling from the Portland area. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wondered if you could comment on, I had an incident. My PSA was a little high. I'm a little over 60. My PSA was a little high, over 4. So they decided, on a couple exams, so they decided to do a biopsy. I mentioned to the doctor, shouldn't I do an MRI first so you can pinpoint? That was recommended in some of the research I did. He said, no, we generally don't do that. So we do a biopsy, and there were some suspect areas. So then I am now scheduled for an MRI and then another biopsy. And luckily it all turned out okay. But it was well over a year for that whole process to take part. And it was a little upsetting with time being such an advantage or disadvantage to this situation. I wonder if they could comment on that.
It's Dr. Ady.
Hi, Christopher. Thanks so much for calling in and listening. It's really challenging to comment on individual experiences, but I will tell you that what you're describing is a rapidly evolving part of evaluating the elevated PSA. And it sounds like you may have been sort of caught in transition as guidelines are changing and things of that nature, because that MRI you're speaking about is being utilized more and more, such that in my practice now, men with a persistently elevated PSA over what I would expect for their age, my recommendation is typically to get that special type of MRI before biopsies, because it can help in the guidance of biopsies. It can help avoid biopsies in some men, and it helps in staging when cancer is eventually found if that man ends up needing to have biopsies. And MRI has sort of evolved. You know, it's been present in our lives for 40 plus years, but in the prostate world, when I was a resident back in 2000, it wasn't helpful at all. They had not figured out the proper sequencing. And then sort of during our COVID years, it's really taken on significant foothold in this space, because the radiology colleagues have figured out a proper way to sequence the MRI to be helpful in the setting of prostate problems. So, you know, I it's hard to comment on your specific scenario, but what you're describing is in my practice now a standard of care, where men with persistently high PSAs will get an MRI if it's acceptable to their health as well as acceptable, unfortunately, to their insurance. But guidelines are now supportive of that, and therefore insurance companies are typically supportive of that.
Christopher, thanks for your call. Dr. Thomas, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, just briefly. I mean, the important piece is what Dr. Eddy just said about it's hard to comment on a specific case because you don't know all the details. One thing to keep in mind that's very important is that you don't just look at a single number when that PSA result comes back and then robotically do something about it. This is something where oftentimes it takes more than one test. Let's just say a test is elevated and you test, depends of course on how much, right? You would repeat that test and you would be able to see if there was continued increase that would give you information. A physical exam would give you information. And we've all understanding now that a prostate MRI is a great test to look at the prostate carefully. But we all know, for instance, that sometimes it's really hard to get patients into that MRI in a timely fashion. So there are absolutely cases where you proceed with a biopsy without the MRI because the circumstances are such that you think you need the biopsy sooner rather than later and you can't get the MRI. In the ideal world, absolutely, Dr. Eddy is right. Patient would come in, there would be something, you would right away do the MRI and then take it from there. But
Lee looks to me like you want to jump in as well.
Yeah. No, I was just listening. I had a plane flying over the house. So,
okay. Christopher, well, thanks so
much.
There's
always that.
calling. Yeah, I know where you live, Lee, and I know that you're in the flight path of the Jetport. Joining us now, Terry Kungle, Chairman and CEO Emeritus at Maine Coalition to Fight Prostate Cancer. Thanks so much for calling in, Terry.
Well, thank you for doing this program. I mean, it's really important that we get more men and more doctor moms focused on prostate cancer.
I understand that you are one of those who has a family history, so knew more about prostate cancer than others. What can you share about your story and your decision to be screened?
So the I've lost both parents and all four grandparents to cancer. Prostate cancer came into my life when I was 16. And my paternal grandfather was diagnosed with terminal stage prostate cancer. This is 1963. Grandmother wouldn't even let us use the word prostate because that somehow sounded like sex. So there's been enormous change in terms of prostate cancer. There was absolutely no treatments except sort of radiation in 1963. My father died from prostate cancer as well. I'm third generation. So I would sort of say that one of the things I would emphasize to the listeners and especially Dr. Mom is if there is a family history, you've definitely got to be a lot more diligent about sort of being sure that you're on top of this.
And I want to ask the doctors a question. When Terry says, if there's a family history, do you mean if there's a family history, I'll go to you, Dr. Eddy, of prostate cancer or a family history of other kinds of cancer as well? And if so, which kinds?
It's a great question. And Terry, thank you. It's great to hear your voice. And thanks for being part of the panel today. So it's really of prostate cancer, but it's also more of any type of cancer. And so, another rapidly evolving field that we've seen in the last decade is the actual ability to test for some of these what we call germline mutations that are passed down from, say, Terry's grandfather to his father to then to Terry. And so those tests can be performed fairly routinely now. They're getting better coverage from insurance companies, and there's lots of financial resources. And so, again, we sort of insert that into our own treatment of men with advanced prostate cancer because that can help their direct descendants with the screening that they need to perform, not just for prostate cancer, but for colorectal cancer, for breast and ovarian cancers, and thyroid cancers. And so those panels are really important. So I would say it's, both prostate as well as other cancers.
Terry, I know that for years you've been very involved with supporting cancer survivors and raising awareness. And what have you learned over those years that survivors and their families need?
Well, I would sort of say a really critical message is prostate cancer is a difficult disease. Don't make it worse by trying to do everything alone. There are a lot of folks in Maine that are more than willing to help people sort of navigate prostate cancer. And there's actually two journeys. There's the medical journey, but there's also the emotional journey. And somebody that's been through that process, I think, can be invaluable in terms of helping the new people that have just been diagnosed and their families and their partners sort of figure out sort of how to proceed and do something that works for them. I mean, the key is helping each patient figure out what is best for them. And that's something that a group of us can try to help do.
Terry, that's such a great point. And to echo what Greg said, it's good to hear your voice. And Terry and I have spoken in the past, and what his organization has done for years now is amazing for the prostate cancer world. It's something that our organization is going to try to carry forward. But your point about support, I think that's something that I didn't even understand was going to be necessary. I'm like, you know what? This is happening to me. This is something I'm going to deal with. I'm going to get through this. And as the process went forward, I didn't quite understand how much I was going to need, not just my wife, God bless her, who was my nurse and caretaker and just saved me. But all like, it was okay to talk about it. And even with my doctor, my urologist, and like, I mean, I just, you know, having those relationships where you could share what you were going through and have someone just to listen and to kind of talk to, you know, it was just much more important than I ever would have imagined. And it's not a me disease, and it might, you know, be happening to you, but it's really happening to you and everybody around you. And to guys aren't known for their willingness to A, have anybody tell them what to do, or B, ask for help, right? That's just not our strong suits. So both of those things are really necessary for this disease. It really does affect, no matter what happens and whatever treatment path you choose for yourself, it's really, really important to have that and to know it's okay to count on people to help you out, whether it's psychological or physical. So I'm glad you brought that up, Terry.
And yeah. Terry, thank you so much for calling in and being part. Terry Kungle, CEO Emeritus with the Maine Coalition to Fight Prostate Cancer. Lots of calls coming in. We'll go to Ludmila calling from Limerick. Hi, Ludmila. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for this important program. And thank you to the panel. And I am Ludmila Svoboda, and I'm a nurse director at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and in Boston. And I have spent my professional life setting up screening and diagnostic clinics, especially in historically marginalized communities, so patients can get, you know, the best possible outcomes by being diagnosed early. And, you know, I saw a very distinct drop-off in the number of referrals we received when the prostate cancer guidelines changed, and it sort of was left up to the primary care providers to do shared decision-making. Before, we really saw many more men, just like in, you know, just like Lee was saying, that were young and that had received the PSA testing as part of their annual physical. And I always, you know, then we would refer folks and they would have that shared decision-making, make the decision with the urologist, with the team, and then decide to treat, not to treat, biopsy, not to biopsy. You know, and I just was listening, and I was in particular listening to Lee and sort of realize, you know, that it is a low-hanging fruit, right? If folks are getting lab work anyways, why not just add the PSA? You know, we're such a high-resource country and have the utmost privilege of having access, a lot of us, most of us, to a wonderful healthcare system. And, you know, I see men that come from low resource countries that have never had the opportunity to have a PSA. And I agree with A, you know, having those tests, having those conversations, starting early, 45 and so forth. Because if it's one life that we can save, it's worth it, right? And finally, I could talk about this, Lee, as well for hours, but my last comment is I really appreciate what you said about being a self-advocate and truly finding a team that fits you and, you know, that you connect with. I always say to my patients, you don't buy the first car, you don't buy the first house, you know, test drive your team until you find, you know, somebody that is not just an expert, but that also fits with you and your family in terms of personality and approach.
Ludmila, thank you so much for calling in. And Dr. Thomas Christian would like to respond.
Yeah, just one. I know Lee wants to talk about this too. What we're hearing today over and over again is that the guidelines, that's one thing, and that the reality of being a patient or being a physician for that patient and sitting in the room and having those discussions and seeing the whole picture, that's not the same. When the guidelines were looked at and when they were created, they were based on two very large studies, scientific studies that had a certain outcome and certain criteria. So the guidelines just reflect those results, but that doesn't mean that they have to be just applied without any discussion to everybody. That's what we're hearing today. All of these stories are very, very important. Terry, for instance, has a strong family history. That's not in the guidelines per se. But we know as clinicians that we have to look and talk to those patients very differently. So I just want to encourage everybody to say, the guidelines say this, that's fine, that's some information. That's not the whole picture. And that's what we heard from everybody. I just wanted to make that clear.
I have to go to another break, and I want to thank Ludmila for her call. We're talking about prostate cancer on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling, and we are learning about prostate cancer. Joining me, TV anchor Lee Goldberg, who launched the Prostate Cancer Maine organization, oncologist Christian Thomas with New England Cancer Specialist, and urologist Greg Adie with Four River Urology. So many calls and questions coming in. We'll get to as many as we can. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566, and email talk@mainpublic.org. I'm going to go to an email from Lansing. What are the risks of biopsy and treatment? Go ahead, Dr. Adie.
How much time do we have?
Yeah. Not much.
So just to put it briefly, it's obviously a long, nuanced discussion, but the primary risks to doing biopsies, besides the discomfort of the procedure, which takes about 8 to 10 minutes, there are some short-term and longer-term bleeding risks and a short-term infection risk, or something called sepsis, where the bacteria can be disseminated throughout the body. And then when we look at treatment, you know, all of the side effects, some short-term, some long-term, they all revolve around, whether it's radiation or surgery, they revolve around changes to urinary function, changes to sexual function, and potential changes to bowel function.
I have an email here from Scott who says, personally, if it were easier to have it removed without complications, I'd just go that route now before issues develop beyond a monitored elevated PSA level. And I think that this is, I'm reading Scott's email, Christian, because I think this is kind of at the crux of this debate over whether to get screened, that let's accept it. If we find out we have cancer, we want to get rid of that cancer. And we don't want to hear, oh, just monitor it. And that's kind of what Scott is saying. So how would you respond to Scott, and how would you advise all of us to think about this?
I mean, the treatment should never be worse than the actual disease, right? That's the issue here. So the prostate gland is sitting deep in the pelvis, right under the bladder. And doing something to that to destroy cancer cells by either removing it surgically or by using radiation therapy is not something easy. What you just said is certainly true for, you know, if you go to the doctor and maybe you have something on your skin that looks abnormal, well, you take it off, send it in, see what, you know, that's relatively easy. That's not true for prostate. The prostate sits deep in the pelvis, there are nerves involved. So we wouldn't just do something prophylactically. And that's why it's so important to have a good relationship. And Lee's pointing this out very well, to have a good relationship to your doctor, because you want to have that discussion. You want to say, if I do this, what can I expect? And if I don't do that, what can I expect? Because again, you know, it's always this balance that you're trying to strike for every patient individually by saying, what is the better path forward here, with treatment, without treatment, close observation, how close? So there's no one single answer to that question other than to say you have to have those conversations.
Lee?
No, I mean, Dr. Thomas hit it on the head. I mean, it's case specific. Every single patient is different, no matter how old you are or what stage of your life you're at. I mean, surgery might not make sense if you're 95 and you have prostate cancer. Probably don't need to have your prostate taken out. I was 52. So, you know, and I'm not shy, and I will never tell anybody what they should do. I did choose surgery. I did not want cancer in there. I could not live knowing that I had cancer, and then we'll just see what happens. That wasn't how I wanted to do it. That was my decision, and Karen and my wife and my family's decision. But I was also 52 years old, and God willing, have a lot of years ahead of me. So that's what made sense for me. But that conversation is what I had with my urologist, Dr. Stephen Ryan, by the way, who is one of my heroes. And he, you know, we had a long conversations. Okay, what is this treatment going to mean? What is this treatment going to mean? What happens here? And we just talked about every possible scenario, and that's what we ended up settling on. But it was a conversation, and I can't stress how important that is to get all your information, do what's best for you and your family, whatever that is, whether it's watch and wait or surgery or radiation or whatever. It's got to be right for you and your family. And that's just so important to not be told what to do, but to have an active decision part of that, making in that decision.
An email here from Mark. Please discuss symptoms of prostate cancer. For example, I am 68 years old and I have to pee every 2 hours during the night. Is that a symptom of prostate cancer that I should address with a doctor? Greg Lee said that he didn't have symptoms, but Mark, our emailer, is telling us he's peeing every 2 hours during the night. What would you say to him?
Ding, 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 ding.
Well, you know, hopefully at age 68, he's being screened regularly and has been screened regularly. Statistically speaking, most likely symptoms such as having to urinate frequently or often at night don't relate to prostate cancer. The large majority of cases of prostate cancer due to screening, which is the number one way that they're found, are completely asymptomatic, like Lee's. You can have symptoms of urinary obstruction from advanced prostate cancer, but it's rare. So when men come in with those symptoms, if they've had appropriate screening at the primary care level, it's very helpful to say on the differential diagnosis list of possible causes that falls much lower on the list. If they've never been screened, and unfortunately, that happens often, they show up with these symptoms, that diagnosis of cancer is sort of at the top of the list of things that need to be ruled out. It's still not the most common cause of those symptoms, but it's one more reason why when symptoms like those develop, or blood in the urine or unexplained weight loss, you should be seeking medical care that sort of goes along in conjunction with the routine, healthy physical examination or annual wellness exam that you have.
We'll go to Tony calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. A couple of things I wanted to share as having had a prostatectomy was the decision tree. And the decision tree that Lee, I think, has talked about is get a lot of input from people. And in my case, I talked to an old woodsman up in northern Maine, and he said, you know, Tony, he says, cancer is not your friend. Take it out. Now, this is about 15 years ago, but I ultimately took that advice. But then finding the right team, as they said, is so important. And I went to a practice and said, so tell me how many of these procedures you, the surgeon, have performed. And the answer came back, well, the practice has performed about 300 of these. And the guidance that I had been given from other folks who had gone through this said, no, find the person who has performed this procedure more than anybody else. And that is important, because and in any surgery, it's important to find somebody whose practice is very, very good. And then ultimately, in the aftermath, I think that folks have to have candid conversations. And that's the thing that scares off a lot of people when they're talking about this procedure. And the fact is most urologists will tell you there are so many ways in which you can recover when you've lost the ability to, you're basically impotent to participate. And that's good news too.
Dr. Thomas, do you have any response to Tony?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, what we just heard is that when you have that diagnosis and you are trying to put all the pieces together, it's a little bit like a puzzle. And every single, and Dr. Adu spoke to this, and Lee as well, every single piece of that information helps to create that whole picture that then ultimately, you know, it gives us an opportunity to come up with a great personalized recommendation. And what's important to understand is that the PSA is just one of those. For instance, the caller said, well, I want to talk about side effects. I want to talk about some of the urinary issues or some of the sexual side effects of dealing with that. That needs to be discussed prior to doing something invasive. So we're hearing this a lot. And I think that as a patient, you need to be educated about this. And you also need to ask your doctors to talk to you about this and explain the whole picture to you.
All right, Vinny, thank you. Tony, thank you for your call. I'm going to go to Vinny in Brownfield. Hi, Vinny, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a friend who went to Massachusetts to have a cyber knife treatment because that's where it was available. Is that available in Maine now, and how effective is it? And also, would the panel be willing to advocate for a free government-sponsored annual medical checkup for especially high-risk groups like cancer, heart disease, or pulmonary?
Vinny, thanks for your question. Cyber knife treatment, is that something either of you is familiar with and want to have a comment on? Dr. Adi?
So thank you, Vinny. So cyber knife is not available in the state of Maine currently. You could have it done in Boston, as your friend did. It is highly successful. Its radiation therapy has been around for a very long time. And, you know, I'll defer to radiation oncology colleagues on the specifics, but I know it to be very successful. It just doesn't have as much long-term data as some of the other forms of radiation therapy do. Its appeal is that it's given over a shorter time frame than traditional radiation therapy. And your question about advocating for free screening, I'm part of an advocacy group within the American Urologic Association. And we head to DC every February or March, and screening in high-risk groups has been part of our discussion with our representatives the last 3 years. So it's near and dear to our hearts, and trying to remove that financial barrier would only be helpful in that scenario.
Let me follow up on that real quick, because this is the mission of Prostate Cancer Maine, is I've been trying to figure out, if we're going to raise all this money, what are we going to do with it? And what you just talked about, Dr. Adi, is exactly what we were going to do. We're trying to figure out the semantics of how it would work and get around HIPAA violations and all that. But with the purpose of our foundation is to raise money to take this show on the road, because a PSA test is only good if that person actually has a primary care physician that they go see annually, and not a lot of people have that. So we're going to bring the test to you. And we're going to get out in the communities, and we're going to go to the underserved, and we're going to make sure that it is available, because I'm so passionate. It's so important. And that is mission number one, is if you're not going to get to a doctor to get a PSA test, I'm going to bring a PSA test to you. So that is what we're working on. That's what we're raising the money for. And that's what's going to happen as soon as we figure out how to put all the pieces together.
And you do have a fundraiser coming right up, right, Lee?
Thank you, Rooksy. September 30th, Prostate Cancer Maine at Dunstan Tappan Table in Scarborough. All the information is on our website, prostatecancermaine.org. And I wanted to, the first person who called in, I wanted to talk to her, but we've been so busy. I love what you're doing in the Boston area. That's exactly what I just said we want to do up here. Anybody listening, and if that woman is still listening too, please reach out to me at prostatecancermaine@gmail.com. I want to hear your stories. I will not give any advice. I'm not a doctor. We got plenty of really qualified ones. I'm not one. I will be happy to share my story and hear yours if you want to share. So I will be here for you if you need to reach out. prostatecancermaine@gmail.com. If you have ideas about how we can make this foundation work and bring more awareness to prostate cancer, please let me know. It's the reason why we started this thing.
Thank you, Vinny, and thank you, Lee. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more question going to Gary in Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Gary, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having this panel. And I was recently diagnosed with high intermediate prostate cancer, and I'm waiting for a more complete, what they call PET scan. I'll get to my question. I was deciding on radiation. And then hormone treatment. But I've recently heard about proton therapy, which isn't available in Maine, but I know it is at Mass General. And I was wondering what the panel of the doctors felt about the success rate.
Okay, yeah, I have to go to the doctor really quick with this. I'll go to Dr. Ady. Greg, what do you think of proton therapy?
Sure. So, Gary, it's a terrific form of radiation therapy, and it is challenging by the limited number of centers in the U.S., and there are certain types of cancers that are prioritized for proton beams, such as pediatric tumors and brain tumors, because it is typically associated with less swelling. So it is used in certain prostate cancer settings. It's evolving. It has very good success rates, but the challenge is exactly what you described, not living near a center or getting on the schedule to be treated.
And good luck to you, Gary. And thank you, all of you, for joining us today. The voice you just heard, Dr. Greg Ady, a urologist at Four River Urology. Also with us, Dr. Christian Thomas, an oncologist with New England Cancer Specialist. And Lee Goldberg, my friend, a TV anchor, and a cancer survivor who has started Prostate Cancer Maine. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy. Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can share your thoughts with Maine Calling by using the Maine Public Vox Pop app. Record your comments for us to use on the air and send us ideas. Tomorrow on the program, the life and legacy of Margaret Chase Smith. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.